Edward Kukierman, thank you very, very much for joining me. Startup Nation United. Difficult times for all of us. It's November 2nd at the time of recording. We're about 3 weeks into after the massacre and the war, global war on terrorism and human dignity. You mentioned you shared with me that your sons are heavily involved in the war, and so we're all praying. So I appreciate out of your busy schedule, and I know how involved you are with everything that's going on in a few different aspects. We're going to be talking about technology, we'll be talking about communication, and we're going to be talking about social impact. These are all critical aspects of what's happening. And so thank you again for being here. I'd love to start by hearing a little bit about who you are. What do you do in the day-to-day outside of the war and the conflict? Who are you, and what is your day-to-day in general?
Thank you, Michael, for hosting me. I'm managing a venture capital fund called Catalyst, and I have established 30 years ago an investment bank, which is today the largest investment banking team in Israel. And we're raising money for technology companies, and we fund the technology companies for now more than 30 years. We have raised about $10 billion for Israeli companies over the years.
Amazing. And if we look at October 7th, October 7th, 6:30 a.m., where were you? What was going on in your world during that time?
I was actually seeing my family in Paris. It was a tough moment for me. I came back to Israel. I have, as you mentioned, two boys that are serving in the army. One is a officer in a commando unit, and one was called for his Miluim, and they are both
Wow.
currently serving in Gaza. Actually, the younger one had see the terrible, horrifying attack of the Hamas as he was fighting on October 7th.
Wow. What was going on in your space and your mind the days following October 7th? How did you find yourself integrate into the collective effort over the days following the massacre?
And because I was in Paris, I was invited because I was a spokesperson of the army for many years, and I was also an officer in a unit which was handling negotiation in crisis situation and hostage situation for more than 10 years. So I was invited in different French and European media to describe the situation. So I really start to present Israel position and describing the what Israel was facing and explaining what is Hamas all about, and the need for deployment of the Israeli IDF to destroy the Hamas. So that was mostly communication with different media from Europe, but also in the US. I had the opportunity also to speak in Fox News and other media in the US. So that was my initial activities. I had also the need to support one of the non-profit organizations that I've been on the board of for more than 20 years, an organization called SAREL, which is hosting since 1982 volunteers from all over the world, and are working in different military bases, doing mostly logistics work. When the war started, we had overwhelming demand from Jews, and not only Jews, from people from all over the world to come to Israel and to work in military bases. One of the challenges we faced at SAREL is that typically we have hosted more than 200,000 people over the years since the establishment of SAREL. But
Wow.
in this case, we have an issue of particularly these volunteers were sleeping in the military bases. For security reason, it was not possible this time. So we had to find, we still need to get some funding in order to be able to lodge those volunteers in hotel and other places during that war. So that those were my two core activities since the war started. And obviously, as Our organization is composed of partners that are very Zionist. Most of the partners came and immigrated from overseas. So everyone in our, among the key people in the organization have been active promoting Israel in different ways and different nonprofit organizations.
Incredible. Going back to the to your work and communications in the days following the massacre, what has that experience been like for you, representing Israel in different countries and different populations? What have you observed, and what was it like for you personally?
You know, I must say that the media were very concerned about the situation, about Israel, and I've been communicating with media in Europe mostly as a spokesperson. I've never seen such a warm welcome from the different media. It is obviously the horrific images that we've seen have affected everyone. And I think that everyone is also concerned about, even in Europe, about the Islamic Jihad, about the ISIS, because they really understood that the Hamas has the same attitude as ISIS. And we saw that many of the French people were affected by the attack in the Bataclan. So obviously they were very supportive of the situation and Israeli efforts.
Yeah, you know, if we're looking in the, your general perspective on communication during this time, and perhaps shine some light for us with less experience in the communication sector, what are we seeing, and what are some of the key elements that there needs to be an emphasis on, not the content necessarily of the war, but in general, strategically thinking, what is, you know, where are we in communication with the world, global perception, and what is our role as strategic thinkers and communicators during these times of conflict?
I mean, at least in the beginning, the media was very supportive. Now they are facing a lot of demonstration, especially in Europe, because the Muslim population is very strong, especially in France, even in England. But because the political leaders understand what we are facing and they have been showing their support to Israel, the core media also have been showing still their support. There is a challenge today in Europe because there are big demonstrations and there is very much, yeah, there is more and more anti-Semitic act. My father was the head of the Jewish community, and we saw how much hatred there is among the people in the Islamic Jihad that are supporting, or among the Muslims that are supporting the Islamic Jihad or the Hamas, how much it is difficult and challenging for the Jewish community that has been exposed to anti-Semitic attack, especially since the war started.
One of the things we talked about before starting this recording, you talked a little bit about on the technology side, that also as a VC arm, you invest in technology companies, you're seeing how technologies are relevant in this space. So I'd love to hear a little bit about, you know, some of the technologies that you see from the private sector and their impact potentially on these types of conflicts.
I mean, we have been seeing a lot of technology over the years. Many of the technology that have been developed in Israel, the team was trained in the army, and many of them came from very special unit like 8-1 unit or 8-200 unit. We see that they have mostly used the experience that they have gained in the army to develop technology that has an impact on an industry that benefiting a community. And we've seen that in many ways, but we have also seen private sector sometimes developing technology that have an impact for the military industry. For example, Our investment bank has been working with a firm called Sivan Laser, which is a new laser technology, super powerful laser that enables to be complementary to the Iron Dome. But the main difference is that using a laser enables to react at the speed of the light, so in real time. And also the cost of using a laser is just the cost of energy. So it costs about $2, $2.50 each time you use it, as opposed to the Iron Dome solution, which costs for each rocket we're using, or missile we're using to destroy a rocket, it costs between $50,000 to $100,000. So I think this is a solution for the future. I think that when Biden came 2 years ago in Israel, it was the time Gantz, that was the Minister of Defense, and showed the solution of Sivan to Biden during his visit. So this is something that is disruptive and could be a game changer in the way the Israeli Defense Force can protect themselves from attack from missiles. I may also show you another example about how the technology coming from the military can be used and have an impact on society. We were at Catalyst the only venture fund that invested in Mobileye. You're probably familiar with Mobileye. Actually, my partner, Yair Shamir, was on the board of Mobileye. And when they, and most of the people at Mobileye in the R&D came from A2 unit, and they have a very, they had an amazing capacity to find a solution for the autonomous drive, to develop a solution to provide an autonomous driving solution for the car industry. So the main breakthrough that came up with Mobileye, that they were able, when they went with a camera, a very cheap camera, when they were able to identify a pedestrian, that to avoid a collision, you got the alert. And now you have a solution that enables to control the car to avoid the collision. That's something that is really disruptive. And that's why eventually Intel bought the company at the time for $20 billion. And we think that there are a lot of technology coming from the military that have a very big impact. Mobileye, just to illustrate, when they start using that for the car, the leading insurance company in Israel offered a subsidized solution to their client because it reduced by 40% the rate of fatal accident.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Incredible. What does that, what does this mean? The, you know, higher level, this, the integration of private sector, you know, public sector, government, military, in the context of the startup nation.
I think the key success of the high-tech industry is that they are really financed by the private sector. If you look at the venture industry, you don't have governmental money. The government has a limited role, just it's indirect. They favor immigration, aliyah. They favor R&D expenditure, but they are not an equity holder in the company. And that's enabled the private sector to move much faster, especially in the high-tech sector, that is a very dynamic sector. In places like France, for example, you have a lot of government funding where they have equity through vehicles such as the Caisse des Dépôts or the Banque Publique d'Investissement. This is not the case in Israel. You have 380 funds in Israel. Last year, they invested $17 billion in the high-tech industry, and that's how the high-tech industry has been growing so fast. When I started my first venture fund in 93, we were three venture funds. Now we are 380, so and there is more than 100 unicorns in the Israeli high-tech industry, which is more unicorn than all the EU put together. So the industry has been moving very, very fast, and this is obviously thanks to this funding that we got mostly from the US, but also a lot from Europe and even China.
Incredible. Just incredible. Edward, thank you so much for this time and for your contribution to both in general the startup ecosystem, but also specifically during the war. You're obviously touching multiple aspects from the technological aspects, but in the communication and your thought leadership and perspective to the social impact that that these companies you've mentioned are doing and your involvement there. So thank you for joining me and for taking the time. I really, really appreciate it. And I'm wishing you, first of all, your son to be healthy and to be safe.
Thank you.
And for the rest of the family and for all of us. And I'm particularly inspired by, you know, the notion of everything that we talked about really speaks to, you know, the unitedness of our country and the fact of how integrated all of these aspects are together to our existence and proliferation and continuously moving forward. So I appreciate it very much and stay safe.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your support.